In what direction?
East.
The easiest way.
No, they went south first, a little bit, a little bit.
Brilliant, David. No other conjectures?
Showed us on the map at the beginning of the year.
Of course they showed it to you, but you forgot about that. They started the opposite direction. Because your idea is that you see the map, yes, the shortest distance between, say, Western Iran and Northern India, yes, mm-hmm. is, well, more or less from Western Iran to Central Iran to Eastern Iran to Afghanistan to Punjab through Khyber Pass, yes?
Yeah.
And there we are,
in
India. You may walk now that distance, you may cover it in, say, what do you think, David? You are a good walker, yes, like me. I'm pretty sure I would cover it with my friends, with a tent, with, of course, walking, without any idiotic cars or pernicious airplanes, yes? With my tribe, yes, of enterprising men and women, I would cover this space quietly walking, yes, without any tension, without any hysteria or panic, yes,
mm-hmm.
in 2 years. Mm. Very slowly, very comfortably, yes. Traveling only by day, yes, at the light of the sun. In 2 years, I and my new Aryan tribe will find itself beyond the Khyber Pass, on the territory of, say, central, or rather a little to the south, Punjab. Okay? Shall we say now, not even Punjab, territory of Delhi, yes, 2 years. Why didn't they do that?
They didn't have a map.
Why didn't they do that? It is very well said by you. It is ideally superbly wrong because they did have their mental map. They knew perfectly well where is. And they knew perfectly well that that shortest way was totally unrealistic because the place was populated very densely by their brothers and cousins, that is most hostile tribes to them. Usually your brothers and cousins, as in the case of Jews and Arabs, yes, are, well, terrible enemies, yes. So, they started traveling west, yes. So they traveled to Anatolia, modern Turkey, then to Balkan Peninsula, can you imagine? Absolutely opposite direction. Then north, to the north shore of Black Sea. Then through Black Sea steppes to northern Caucasus. Then slightly to the south, pre-Caspian region, then to eastern Iran, which they could have reached in 2 months, mm. yes. And from eastern Iran to Afghanistan, to Khyber Pass, to Punjab, to Delhi. This journey took approximately, according to a very learned and talented friend of mine, lasted for 400 to 500 years. That is, roughly speaking, around 80 generations. And by the time when they, with their core of the Rig Veda, which they definitely carried from their homeland, yes,
mm-hmm.
and preserved an oral tradition. When they settled around Delhi, yes, present Delhi, by that time their cousins, the remaining tribes, a long time had developed written tradition. So what was preserved by that journey group of tribes in oral tradition was had already been written by their cousins during that time. And when we now compare the most ancient Indo-Iranian Persian text to it, Avesta, yes, Avesta, in very many ways similar to Rig Veda, we see gigantic difference due to the fact that Avesta was put to writing very soon and the Vedas remained in oral tradition. It changes the face of that culture. All culture around that became written very early. Indian remained oral. And that is why Indian mind, however backward in very many so-called material ways, went ahead of the rest of the mankind in quite a few very important ways. That is why they developed in the course of time, due to that oral tradition, they developed some most abstract branches of learning. Yes. And in this respect, went ahead of such highly developed cultures as Chinese culture, or Mesopotamian, Semitic, Jewish, Egyptian. They invented three absolutely new spheres of knowledge. To wit,
grammar.
The first scientific grammar was created by them. Second, psychology. Because when you are cultivating your memory to God knows what, you are, in a way, by definition, a psychologist. You know how to do it. You know how your mind functions, yes? And so,
mathematics.
They discovered positional calculus. At least 600 or 700 years before, probably even more than any other culture in the world. Yes. And they discovered, it was absolutely revolutionary discovery, they discovered zero. Yes. All these discoveries undoubtedly were the result of that yogic, really yogic, without quotes, practice of memorization and cultivation of memory and recollection in their own ancient oral tradition. Now, in the second half of the first millennium BC, the situation changed. It changed in quite a few. We have the appearance of totally new cults, or partly new cults, more or less assimilated or absorbed by Vedic tradition, as well as totally heterogeneous religions and philosophies like Buddhism and Jain. But not only that, it was a time of three greatest. It was a time, first, historically, in our chronological sequence, it was a time of the arise, appearance, and rise of what kingdom? Magadha, Magadha kingdom. It was the first specifically, shall we say, Indian. Why do I use term specific? Because India did not exist before that time as India. There was a lot of petty chieftains, a lot of tribal formations, a lot of tribal unions, a lot of tribal kingdoms, and the only unifying, uniting factor was at the beginning what? The Vedic religion and the Vedic ritual and the Vedic Aryan language and what later was called Sanskrit. That is, unifying factors were, shall we say, entirely or more or less entirely what? Religious and cultural, but not political. And in fact, the very term denoting India as a unity, as a geographical entity, not as a sheer religion, because in terms of religion, it was called what? Aryabhatta, land of Aryans. And Aryans were those. It was not a term of blood, it was a term of religion and ritual. Aryan means what? Noble. That is a person who practices noble ritual. And it is not a geographical term. It traveled with them thousands and thousands of miles, hundreds and hundreds of years. More than that, there are some reasons to suppose that other Indo-European tribes used the term Aryan in more or less the same sense, that is, in connection with their religion, and that is why we have another land of Aryans called Aryan now, which are Aryan, Irish Republic. Irish means Aryan. It's the same language. They came to the same Anatolian Indo-European stock. They were cousins. Celts were cousins of ancient England. Yes. With the same more or less analogous ritual vocabulary. Yes. But it was not a geographical entity. And the idea of India as a sort of people became necessary only when?
Neoclavianism.
When?
Neoclavianism.
No, of course, long before. It became necessary when Aryans colonized Gangetic region entirely by the 6th or 7th century BC. And when the necessity arose to call all those different peoples, Aryan and non-Aryan, Vedic and non-Vedic, Indo-European or Indo-Iranian and Turanian and Proto-Mongolian and Dravidian, all those dozens of peoples populating Gangetic region, yes, there was a need to produce a kind of, I hate the word, but still a kind of ideology. And that is when the term denoting India, however mythological, appeared. That is, what? Bharat still remains very Aryan. Bharata later became the term Jambudvipa. The continent of flower Jambu. That is what we see in the early Buddhist texts. And it was definitely but it is still in its origin genealogical term, more than denoting a geographical or political entity. And India started becoming political entity somewhere, not India, but a certain territory. Started becoming political entity, a political entity somewhere in the East and definitely in the fourth region. The first Magadhan king, Ajatasattu, Bindusara, and a lot of others, they indeed remained mainly in the character and in the policy tribal barbarians and tribal bandits. Of course it goes without saying. Still, Magadha was not any longer the territory of one tribe or of one group of tribes. More than that, what was even more important, and we find reflection of that factor in the Mahabharata, the absolute cultural hegemony of Brahmins was shattered. First the Kshatriyas and then other Varnas, Vaishyas in the first place, started becoming more and more powerful. Why? Because they were becoming richer and richer. More than that, a lot of non-Aryan tribes became prominent economically and politically. There is no slightest doubt that Buddha's own tribe, Shakyas, had nothing to do with Aryans or with anything. It was a local Himalayan Nepalese tribe, no doubt about it. Anyway, what I'm driving at, there appeared necessity of establishing some neutral elements of culture. Neutral to what? To the diversity of population. Non-specifically Brahmanical, non-specifically Aryan, yes? Non-specifically Kshatriyan, non-specifically Vedic. Something which would accommodate the growing diversity, the growing variation, the growing variety of local conditions, local tribes, and local cults and religions. And that is why when the reign of the king Ashoka starts, we have that seemingly absolutely new policy, new structures of political power, but definitely they were not at all new. They simply, well, surfaced under Ashoka. Under Ashoka we have a fully fledged state where all tribal needs were more or less taken into account, all religious preferences and idiosyncrasies, all racial rivalries undoubtedly were taken into account, but here we have the beginning of that which is pure political power. And a real political power, to be successful, is, should remain absolutely neutral to its own diversity. Take all great political powers. They cannot remain tribal. They cannot even remain national. They need to take into account everything to be successful. Which in the first place necessitates what? To work out their own political imperial ideology. And my impression is that the beginning of writing was connected, if not entirely causally, at least in terms of simultaneous changes and conditions and operating factors, was connected with new political forces. I would like to now to emphasize one aspect of oral culture. Oral culture is by definition more private. Yes. I, in order to know the text, I have to come to you, to learn from you. That what does it mean to learn from you, from your mouth? There is no other source. Any knowledge of text implies what? A personal communication. Absolutely personal. As in family, as in love, as in any other highly personal matter, yes? Now, in order to learn the Vedas, you have to take a good Sanskrit text of the Vedas in our periodic library, a bad or reasonably bad English translation. And there we are. It is impersonal. At that time, it was impossible. You have to come into contact with certain people, and that contact was very often individual between one pupil and one teacher. And the consequence of that, what was? Predominance of individual connections and necessity of what? Cultural elite. And you must know perfectly well that no imperial power, no absolute power, be it fascist, communist, or any other power, it doesn't like elite. In a way, all dictatorial powers, the more dictatorial, the more they are, in fact, egalitarian. They tend to have only one above everybody else, the king. That was the King Ashoka. To him, all his subjects were equal, because he was an absolute dictator, or at least strove to become one. And that is why the old system of learning and oral tradition, it was not abolished by him. No, he was a very wise man. But to it was added a totally different ideological principle, one for everybody, be it Aryan or non-Aryan, be it a rich person or poor person, be it orthodox or heterodox, that is, we may say, a neutral ideology, a neutral imperial kingly ideology was in need of a neutral means of communication, that is, writing. And so, the first specimens of writing we find were in Ashokan edicts. They were for everybody, yes. Ashoka did not, he was not hostile to Brahmins, but he didn't like them. He was not hostile to Kshatriyas, but he didn't like them. He liked only one thing, power. And in order to exercise your power successfully, you have to have a certain degree of equality. And the new ideology was probably the first show is the unified political religious ideology in the world. That is the ideology which we read in the Ashokan myths. I do not think that there was nothing written and read before Ashoka. More than that, the practice of stone carving might have been borrowed from the West. The form of Ashokan pillars clearly suggests a lot of artistic borrowings. Not to speak of the fact that the very system of writing was borrowed. It is absolute fact, yes. From Mesopotamian region, yes. Because that system of writing was essentially what? Phoenician. As all other systems of writings, including that used by you and me. All of them had the Western Semitic Phoenician mainly origin. Jews also borrowed their alphabet from Phoenicians or any other Western Semitic tribe. And it is also very important that imperial ideology, together with writing, was on the whole borrowed from non-Aryan sources. Why? Because we have what? Two new religions, definitely non-Aryan, Buddhism in China, as the sources of the new ideology. More than that, my impression is that the real spread of Buddhism and Jainism and probably Ajivaka and some other heterodox religions coincided in time with the spread of writing, with the beginning of written tradition, and with the formation of new kingly ideologies. We are witnessing the formation of a new Indian new culture which can be called not Vedic, not Aryan, but Indian. It is a difficult question. What I told you today does not cover the whole range of problems. And there are some dubious moments even in my own exposition, or particularly in my own exposition of that problem. But since the time of Ashoka and the beginning of new written traditions and development of those new neutral so-called indifferent political ideologies, we see the end of traditional isolation of ancient India from the rest of the humankind. India of Mahabharata was a very self-sufficient and isolated cultural region. India of Ashokan edicts stopped being that. And India, very soon after Ashoka, after Alexandria invasion, became one of the world cultures. In very, very lively contact with other cultures in the West and in the East. What is particularly important here, that new forms of religion and new ideologies, they became the means, the instruments of further contacts. The isolation of India stopped, ceased to exist, also due to the fact that new religious movements very soon would spread beyond all historical, ethnic and religious borders of the previous land of Aryans. That is, Buddhism, well, triumphantly journeyed south, then spread to what?
Sri Lanka.
No, after that to Sri Lanka, then to Central Asia, then even to Middle Asia, and all that through northwestern corner of Punjab, that is through the way they had come to India, yes, 12th century, 13th century before that. My impression is, I do not like generalizations. Still, you cannot study history without generalizing what you know. My impression is that culture does not change by changing one or two of its, however, essential features or traits. Culture really changes when, well, its whole structure changes. And of course, what is typically Indian, what is unrepeatedly Indian, uniquely Indian, not repeated in any other culture, that the mechanism of cultural changes, including politics, including economics, including everything, worked in a way totally different from other cultures. I will tell you a couple of very simple things. When ancient Greece ceased to be ancient, ceased even to be Hellenistic, ceased even to be, politically speaking, Hellenic and became Roman, and then became Christian. All other religions were ousted into the past and were preserved not in their function, but only in memory. They were saved by written tradition, otherwise known nothing. When ancient Egyptian culture was in decline, yes, we see that all religious cults disappeared. Northern Egypt became entirely, sometimes fanatically Christian. Yes. When later on Egypt was conquered by the Muslims, it became entirely Muslim, with very little enclaves of ancient Coptic Christian traditions. In India, it was in a totally different way. The spread of new ideologies did not want to shake the existence of that which was before. The Buddhism and Jainism, however triumphant in some centuries, left untouched the ancient Vedic and later Brahmanic religion. The development of new Hindu cults of Vishnu and Shiva left intact the, with some exception, the ancient Vedic bridge. The prominence of new social groups, Kshatriyas and Vaishyas, left intact the predominant predominance and culture of the ancient Brahmanical groups. In this respect, it is, and it was, and still remains, almost unique culture, because its historical changes somehow, in a sort of fantastic way, managed to leave intact a lot of most ancient cultural phenomena. That's it. I think it is more than enough for today. Now, let me return to your essay.